Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast all about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and this week we are joined by author and journalist Nancy Rommelman. Before we get started, I wanted to tell you about our newest sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. My Mentor Book Club is a monthly subscription box of two nonfiction new releases every month. The books are curated, so you're getting new releases that you maybe haven't heard of yet, and they range from memoir to self-help, from business to biographies. This month, I got Small Fry by Lisa Brennan Jobs, who's Steve Jobs' daughter. It's her memoir. And I also got a book called Joyful by Ingrid Fattel Lee. And it's a book all about finding joy in small spaces in our lives. It's always free shipping with My Mentor Book Club, and you can cancel at any time. Listeners of The Stacks get 50% off their first month if they go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. Enjoy! Our other sponsor this week is Audible. For your free trial and your free audiobook download, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Are you a member of the Stacks Pack? We're launching something brand new, group video chats to discuss the Stacks Book Club picks with members of the Stacks Pack. So go join today and be a part of these awesome discussions. We're starting next week with our first chat about Bad Blood by John Carreyrou. It's super easy, so go to patreon.com/thestacks and join our little conversation. Here's your weekly reminder to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. All right, now let's get started. This week's guest is Nancy Rommelman. She is a journalist and the author of a new true crime book called To the Bridge. And I'm very excited for you all to meet her. Let's do it. Hi, everybody. I am here today with Nancy Rommelman, who is a writer and journalist whose work has appeared in the LA Times, LA Weekly, New York Times Magazine, and more. Her most recent book, To the Bridge, A True Story of Motherhood and Murder, came out earlier this summer, and we'll be getting to that soon. But first, hi, Nancy. Welcome.
Tracy, thank you for having me.
I am so excited you're here. I really want to talk about your book, but we're going to start with talking about you. So tell me a little bit, or tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a New York City girl, went from New York to Los Angeles and spent 18 years here. That's where I started my writing career, writing a lot for the LA Weekly and other publications. In 2004, my husband and I moved up to Portland, Oregon. I've been living there, but now I'm sort of bi-coastal between New York City and Portland.
Oh, and that's so nice.
Still writing.
That's like the best of both worlds, mm-hmm. The city and then like Portland's almost like the country.
It is. You come back and I love, like, New York is in my blood. I get there, right. And I feel completely normal. And then I get back to Portland. It's like, oh, but this is super nice too. Just chilling on the porch.
Yeah.
So
deep breaths and all that.
It works.
And so green.
It is very green.
So green. I love Portland. Okay. So here's what I want to know. Because I have this fantasy that I'm a journalist, even though I'm not and I can't write and I don't write. But to me, a journalist is like one of the coolest jobs. Like, I think maybe because I read All the President's Men and was like, whoa, like, look what they could do. but I just I love journalists. So I want to know when/how you knew you wanted to do this and then also how you actually did it.
Okay, so when I came to Los Angeles, it was to actuate my destiny of becoming a movie star, which I absolutely knew was going to happen,
sure.
Which of course, like everyone else that comes to Los Angeles, did not happen. And which I'm extremely grateful for.
Okay.
When I was pregnant with my daughter in 1989, I started to read scripts for ICM. And so you would read, you'd write coverage and you'd write some criticism. And I was doing a couple of those a day, which turned out to be pretty good practice because you're writing, I don't know, 5,000-6,000 words a day and you don't even realize you're doing that. And then I segued into, I got a little tiny story for a magazine called Bikini Magazine, which was like a lads magazine, like okay. Ray Gun. And they sent me to write a like 50 word story about a new genital piercing place in Los Feliz. So I walk in there and I'm kind of getting the lay of the land and this couple comes in and they are getting their engagement rings.
Okay.
And I said to them, I said, well, what are you going to do when people ask to see the rings? And the wife is like, well, we'll show them. And I thought, okay, that's it. I'm never doing anything but journalism for the rest of my life.
And where?
This was in Los Feliz off of.
No. Oh, where were the rings?
Oh, well, labia and then something called a Prince Albert. I don't exactly remember where that was, but it was, you know.
The penis?
Ball sack or something. I don't really know.
Oh, my God. I'm dying.
I know. So anyway, I I never looked back. I was very fortunate in that my first big feature was this road trip I took with a pen pal of John Wayne Gacy's to visit the serial killer. Before he was executed, I had written that for Details, but then the editor changed. They didn't want it. It wound up on the cover of the LA Weekly. That was 1994, and I was
And that's a book also.
Well, it's
you
not.
You can get it.
You can, yes, for $2.99 on Amazon. It's called, they changed the title of it. It's called Destination Gacy. It was never online because it was 1994, mm-hmm. and a couple of years ago, an outfit came up and said, "Hey, we'd love to like repackage it and sell it." So yeah, it's basically an article,
right?
So like
oh
a single.
Oh my gosh! And before you went to see John Wayne Gacy,
yeah,
like when you were like, "Okay, I'm going to go do this."
Yep.
Were you super anxious and nervous? Like, what were you feeling? Because the thought of like going to interview a serial killer.
There was some of that, but I realized in the course of writing the piece that that was something we do to ourselves. Because
right.
let's be honest, we're going to a maximum security prison. Though he was just sitting with me at a table and handcuffed. There was no like plexiglass or anything
right.
like that. That's something, of course, we know what he's done and it's terrifying, but he's not going to do it to us.
Right, sure.
So that was something you almost, you titillate yourself
yeah.
with that. What I really didn't know was how to write this kind of story,
sure.
but it really, you know, we stopped in all these towns along the way. We went to the strip bar in Vegas, and then we went to University of New Mexico, like these frat boys, and then my daughter's Native American relatives in Oklahoma at church who were praying for Gacy. So you got this incredible sort of cultural moment of how we imbibed and then reacted to this killer. And it was just like, wow, I get yeah, it was a really incredible experience. That was my first feature.
Wow.
So at that point, it wound up on the cover of The Weekly, and I just kept writing.
And did you came up with the idea to do it?
Well, it was this guy. He was a Hollywood guy, musician. Sure. He'd been pen pals with him, and we had a mutual friend who said, oh, hey, Rick's going to go do this thing. He thinks he'd like a writer to come with me. I'd barely met Rick. I'd met him at a party once, and we're like, all right. So we just did it.
Oh, my God. Do you still keep in touch with Rick?
Nah.
No. I thought maybe you guys like would become best friends or something.
No, but you know, a couple of years ago, this wonderful writer, Inara Vrzemniaks, pitched this this panel to this writer thing. Subjects sitting with the person that they've written about like years later, and mine was one of them. I thought this is an incredible panel, but it never went anywhere.
Right. Well, so. How would you have sat with John Gacy?
No, not Gacy. Oh. Maybe Rick. No, yeah.
Oh,
no,
I see.
Not.
I'm like, did they miss the memo?
Been, yeah.
Like, he's
no,
not
with
here
Rick.
Anymore.
You know, you do these stories and you become intensely close with people and intensely close with these stories. And then you never
then
see
you never
them
see
again.
Them. Right.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's a good one. Do you have a particular, if you don't know, I guess I haven't said this, Nancy writes a lot about true crime and sociopaths and that kind of thing. I mean, and other things. You also
yeah.
just write about like characters and like interesting humans. But do you have like a particular murderer or something that is like a favorite of yours or like one, not a favorite? That's weird. But
no,
yeah,
I
a
know.
Favorite. You know
you
what I mean?
In terms that I've written about?
Or just like that you're interested in, like a story. Like I'll give you mine. Mine is Jonestown.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Obsessed with Jonestown.
I should introduce you to my friend Nick Gillespie, who has an obsession with Jonestown.
Okay, and he can come on and we can talk Jonestown
great.
Books
okay.
because like, but for me, that's like, it's pretty dark and like a weird thing to be obsessed with, but that's just the one that speaks to me for whatever reason.
Well, you know, that's a good one because it's so, it's so violent and people went, you know, halfway across the world
right.
in order to commit this mass suicide.
Right.
I don't know that I have a favorite one, but I do have a comment about that. I've written now about several cult leaders. I've
mm-hmm.
written about the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh
okay.
went out to where, you know, he had his people in Oregon. I've written about this woman named Ching Hai. Obviously, I know about Jonestown. I've read about the start of the Mormon faith.
Sure.
Every cult leader, I swear I could write cult leadership for dummies. It's always the same, playbook. But Jim Jones was just super extreme.
He was extreme.
Yeah.
And he was good.
Well,
like he had like a real game plan. He had an idea that was so powerful that was like, and it was so of the moment.
Yes, but they
I guess they all do.
They all are. They're telling you, look, you're more evolved than the rest of these right. people. Ergo, we're going to create this new utopia. Oh, also, we get to do things that other people don't, usually involving a lot of sex with the cult leader.
Right.
Right. And so, but then you're also allowed to have sex. Oh, but you know, you're not really allowed to have kids or to see your kids. It's right. just, it's the same thing. It's happening right now somewhere. I guarantee you, if we're talking 2 years from now, we will have spoken about the next one.
I'm waiting. There's a podcast called Cults, and it's two episodes. And the first one is like kind of about the origins, and then the second episode is about like whatever terrible thing they've done. And they're focused on like cults that have done terrible things, like not just cults that are.
Well, is it maybe the cults that don't do terrible things just haven't
done
out
them yet? Yeah,
or haven't done them.
We're
yet.
Not there yet, but it's really good. And there's also that one that's called Heaven's Gate, which was about such a good podcast. If you haven't listened,
I haven't.
Oh my god,
I just want to give up the rest of my life and listen to podcasts
about cults
forever. Yeah, cults and politics.
Yeah, that's like my wheelhouse. So I'm so glad you're here. Okay, I do want to talk. Oh, I do. Okay, well, before we get to your book, one more thing. You wrote a modern love story.
I did.
For the New York Times.
I did.
About you, your husband, your ex-husband or ex-partner?
My ex-partner.
Ex-partner.
My daughter's dad.
The father of your daughter.
Yeah.
And he, tell us about it. So amazing.
Tim and I, this is my daughter's dad. You know, we split when my daughter was not even three. She's 28 now. But we've always remained super close. And he moved to Portland a couple of years ago. And like he hangs out. We watch the Trailblazers games. And he's just a nice guy. And he stays in our house when we go on vacation. Mm-hmm. And he was like sitting across the counter. I'm like, dude, what's that thing on your neck? And it was kind of swollen. And we're like, maybe it's this. And when we came back a week later, it was bigger. And he was, you know, he's a Native American guy, kind of has a mistrust of, you know, white Western medicine. Oh, I'm going to use cannabis oil and all this. And I'm like, Tim, I mean, it's growing like before your eyes. Turns out stage 4 HPV related tumor in his neck. And he was kind of living in a super shitty place. Oh,
it's okay. I swear all the time.
Okay.
It's my identity.
Place, like, just had kind of room in a rooming house, and we have a nice place, and he moved in with us, and he lived with us for a year while he went through treatment. And, I mean, he was a very, very sick man. And I actually didn't know if he would make it, and he almost didn't, but he did. And so I always thought this would make a pretty good modern love, and they – bought it right away and ran it pretty fast. And it turned out pretty well.
It's so amazing. I will link to that in the show notes and everything else that we talk about. I link to everything in the show notes.
It was last October, I believe.
Yeah,
October.
I read it twice now since I found out you were coming on the show. But it also like went viral. Like I read it when it happened, like when it was posted. And then I read it again 2 more times. I didn't realize that you were the same. I was like, oh, that's the
maybe
same
that's
person.
The same Nancy Rowe.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's really, it's an interesting story. Do you feel like, I mean, obviously something like that changes you, but changes your relationship with the people around you, or, you know, you find new depths when you go through something terrible.
My mom had said to me, well, you know, that's really, it's really unusual that, you know, you had him staying with you and blah, blah. I was like, actually, no, mom, you know how many times I've heard this now? People are like, yeah, my mom and dad did that, or I did that with my ex-wife. I think, you know, I've written a couple stories about sort of the death industry in my career. And a number of years ago, I just decided, you know what? I'm going to get good at this stuff if I can, because you've got to be useful. Like, you can't go in your closet and cry. You can't pretend that this is not happening. You're not going to be of use to anybody. Mm-hmm. So I just try to, like, you marshal your forces. And it is amazing. I'm going to start crying. How good people are.
Yeah.
How they step up to the plate in crises. It didn't make it into the piece, but we have one of our dearest friends, and we didn't really tell many people what was going on with Tim because, you know, and he just walked in and embraced Tim, who was like, looked like a bag of sticks. Mm. And he's just like, how you doing, man? And it's just like, oh, people are so good.
Yeah.
So we just want to be there for each other, and not to sound corny or anything.
It's great. I just feel like something like that is such a major life event, regardless of who the person is in your life that is going through, you know, cancer treatment. That's no joke. You know, like, it's not a broken leg, you know?
Too many people I know right now, man. It's just, it's everywhere.
It's really, it's devastating. And, you know, those are the kind of things that either break you down or build you up as like the family member who's witnessing, or both.
I think that's true. But I think you'd be amazed at how people step up to the plate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for sure. I think death, or the thought of death, brings out different things in you that you would never right. even think of yourself.
Well how would you? Right. You haven't encountered it yet.
It's definitely one of those things you have to be face to face with to see, you know, who you are, what you are, you know, or what you could be. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times that happens too. Okay. Since we're now talking about death, we're going to go to the dark place. Actually, I don't want to frame it that way because I don't really think so your book is about Amanda Stott Smith, who in May 2009, dropped or threw her two young children, Eldon, who was 4, and Trinity, who was 7, off of the Selwood Bridge in Oregon into mm-hmm. the Willamette River. Mm-hmm. The 4-year-old Eldon, he died, and Trinity screamed, and people came and got her out of the river mm-hmm. like 40 minutes later.
40 minutes.
Which is, that's insane to me. She was 7 and it's a river. It's not a lake.
It's 53 degrees and it's moving in the middle of the night.
With a broken collarbone or clavicle.
Sternum. Yep.
Anyways, so your book covers this crime, but also you're fascinated or committed to solving this idea of why did this happen? How did we get here?
Right.
I feel like the crime itself is really horrific and terrible and it is a very dark thing. But what I like about your book is that you're able to find reasoned, not necessarily answers, but options for answers of how did we get here as opposed to like a full condemnation of the people.
Oh, yeah. Well, first, I would just like to commend you for saying I don't want to just call it dark. Dark is shorthand for – what is it shorthand for?
I don't know.
You know? Yeah. But you didn't. You said, no, let's just not do that. And so it's because it is a human narrative. Okay. Right. These people are not stick figures. They're not just like little – you know, ink you saw on a page. And at an event last night, someone, a dear, dear friend of mine said, it's so hard for me to read your book. I have children the same ages, same genders. But as soon as I started to realize you were writing about human beings and not just this monster in the closet, I'm able to read it. Because yes, there is no, first of all, what would be the point of me walking into this story in order to vilify people and point fingers? I mean, yes, of course the press does this. Yes, you have sensational books. This is not that book, readers. If you want a book that's going to like cut and dried and here's the monster, this is not your book.
Right.
This is going to very literally let you see some reasons how Amanda got to the bridge. That was my, it's like, how did she get to the bridge? So, you know, we roam over several decades of her life as well as my investigation into looking into this story. And I think if you walk in saying, I'll never understand how this happens, by the end you will say, you know what? Maybe we can't understand how this happens.
And you present that very early on in the book, like that is almost as your, not your motivation, but maybe your challenge. Because a few people, the husband and father, or the estranged husband and father, and the judge both say, how could this ever have happened? This is so terrible. We'll never understand it. And it kind of feels like you were like, oh, we won't?
Oh, that's exactly what happened. So, you know, she was caught the same day as the children were dropped from the bridge. And, you know, blah, 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 plea deal. It was about a year before she was sentenced to 35 years before the possibility of parole. So I've been on this story already for a year looking into things. As I'm sitting in the court and the judge and her former husband said, no one will ever understand. Snotty little Nancy in the front row said to herself, oh, yes, we will.
Yeah. You're like, I'll understand. Yeah. I'm going to tell everybody. I love that. Okay. Just a heads up to listeners, we're going to cover this book in detail the first week of November. So we're going to talk in detail about the book. So I'm going to focus with you, Nancy, kind of more about the how you wrote it, how being an investigative journalist works, especially when it comes to something that is, you know, this is the worst thing that ever happened to this family, I'm assuming, right? Like, I can't imagine that there's much worse that happens to a family. And so you're looking at the darkest days, months, weeks, years of not just the children, but also, you know, Amanda's family and Jason's family. And there's another child, Gavin, who is the half brother to Trinity and Eldon, through Amanda.
Right.
And so his family, his dad and stepmom. And so there's all these families and there's children and there's so much going on. And I kind of want to know, like, how do you approach talking to these people?
with a great deal of care.
Yeah.
Every, you know, there's, if you're a daily journalist, I'm assuming, because I've never been a daily journalist at a daily paper, you know, look, you got to get that story out the next day, which means you are knocking on people's doors and you are cold calling and, you know, camping on the lawn. I have never done that, in, except like on assignment for the New York Times a few times where they sent me to a crisis zone and I had to report. I did not contact the major players in this story for months. I was blogging at the time, so some people came to me, but I just did, you know, the shoe leather reporting. I did make contact with her defense attorney, who was just fantastic.
He's a character in the book.
Ken Hadley. He was so great. He let me hang around, but never, ever betraying anything of his client, of course. You just, you do it methodically. Sometimes you do it wrong. You know, sometimes you try to contact someone and you blow it. You just have to think, I'm contacting this person. What is the, how do I think this person will speak with me? How do I approach them? What's the approach? And sometimes they blew me off. But as a friend of mine once said, no means not now. Right. And for the most part, people did speak with me. Though it took about a year until after her sentencing, when they could no longer A, affect her fate, and B, they'd had no chance to speak at a trial because there was no trial, and they needed to tell people what they knew.
Right. And this book kind of functions as the trial.
Well, you
for
know,
a lot of the people who are talking to you.
I think that's right. And, you know, I had more than one person that's in this book say, I'm talking to you because I didn't get to say my piece
on the record
at the trial.
Right.
And a lot of people have also said to me, oh, you had so much empathy for Amanda and da da da. And I'm like, yes, well, of course, because you have to walk into a project not hating your people. However, you know, the book also in some ways, you know, is an indictment of what she did.
Yeah.
But also not. I mean, we're trying to see things in a round way. In the story.
And there's, I mean, there's a lot of deception going on, and there's a lot of manipulation going on in this book, and it's a lot to sift through, especially for you, because you never got to talk to Amanda.
No.
And did you ever talk to Jason?
I saw Jason several times.
Right, but you never got to like sit down and interview
him. He would not speak with me.
So it's interesting that your two like main characters, essentially two of the main characters, you never get to talk to, but you're sifting through all of their deceit and lies. And it's just, I know I've heard you say this, that, you know, at first you were like, how am I going to write this book without meeting Amanda? But I almost think the book is better that you don't.
As I've said to people, had she spoken with me, that would have been part of the story and that would have been terrific. That she didn't is also completely fine with me. I mean, you've read the book. Do you feel like you did not meet Amanda and Jason in this book?
No, you do meet them.
You meet them.
Unfortunately. Yeah. It's not. You definitely don't want to hang out with them later.
No.
I mean, some of my favorite true crime books, the person never talks to. I mean, we talked before we started talking about Columbine and how it's one of my favorite. And Dave Cullen never talks to Klebold or Harris. I mean, they're dead. So I think that the idea, I think that that's like more of a TV thing, right? It's like Diane Sawyer gets the interview. And so we rely on that and we think that we want to hear from the person. But if you do your work, I don't need to hear from them. I got it. And they're probably going to lie to you anyways.
But that's right. And as I've said before too, it's, you know, when people are lying to you or not speaking with you, they're telling you the story.
Right.
Like that's part of the story. And Amanda and especially Jason not speaking with me are completely characteristic of who they are. And the reader will know that. Right. I mean, the reader will, they're like, well, yeah, why would he, you know, why would he speak with me? How's he, although I would be interested to see, because everybody had said to me, you know, he is just, he can sell ice to an Eskimo.
Right.
He's unbelievably charming. Now, I've met a lot of these charming, habitual liars in my work and in life sometimes.
Yeah.
I was like, that might be kind of cool to sit with him and think like, keep going.
I'm so interested in what you're saying.
I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Do you have any like question that you would have thought that you would have led with either of them?
No, I don't. Someone asked me this last night, and with Amanda, I really wanted, and this might be like the mothering part of me. I wanted to just sit with her. You know, when people are in deepest grief or desperation or depression, sometimes all they need from you is for you to just sit there.
Right.
Like if it's a good friend, you can maybe rub their hands or feet or something. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to just sit with her and sort of by osmosis understand her grief. But of course, this is my assumption of what grief, because for me, there would be nothing that could possibly approach losing my child.
Sure.
And I wanted to be around that. Now, of course, this may not be her experience or position at all, but that was the only, I did not have a list of questions for her.
Interesting.
At all.
And nothing for him either.
Well, probably at the time during the writing, you know, so yeah, tell me about those 500,000 pills that you packed in the diaper bag.
Coming That's over the from one Mexico. That I want to know about.
Yeah, but he, come on, he would never.
And Eldon's name. That's the question that I would have been like,
man,
my guy. We won't give that up
we
now.
Won't.
We'll
won't.
Wait for you
we
guys
won't.
To read it. But honestly, there's a moment in this book where you're like, I might have to throw up right now because that's the sickest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's on my rote, and we're not going to say what it is. At one point I had in the book, it wasn't there anymore. It was like certain missiles had been preemptively set to go off to cause the maximum amount of pain and humiliation.
Yeah.
Like maybe obviously 4.5 years earlier, those missiles had been set.
And even earlier than that, too.
And even earlier than that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Y'all, this book is really crazy and amazing. And just the people. I mean, that's also part of it. It's like you hear about this story and you're like, I want to know who these people are, because you can't imagine when you hear it that you know anyone who could ever do something like this. And then the more you break it down, the more you're like, I mean, maybe that one person, like I can see that happening.
Yeah.
Like they become so human, it's almost scary.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait, I actually can relate to knowing or being around or have, you know, like, gives me chills.
And it makes it harder than to say, like, I'll never understand this. Yeah. It's like, oh, man.
Now I have to try.
Now I can. Now. Oh, God.
This is way worse. Yeah. Okay. This is another question about being a journalist.
Yeah.
Or about kind of like the process. So in the book, there's a few different people who have different memories of things with Amanda, like her two best friends. One of them remembers something, and then another person, you know, just like not major things. And you include it often multiple people's memories, which some of them turn out to be untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered, and this is probably just for you and it's different for other journalists, how do you decide what things that are not necessarily true to include and what things to edit out? To tell your story. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So everybody, you know, the old movie Rashomon, five people see a crime, they all have seen a different crime. Everybody's experience is going to be different. It depends, you know, Amanda's grandmother is not going to be the same as, you know, Jason's, that's her former husband, you know, drug buddy.
Right.
It's not going to be.
Right.
I'm not just telling you, hopefully, if I did my job right, the story of Jason and Amanda, we're it's the people that surrounded them.
Sure.
And so if this guy is being a little cagey, but he's telling me this story with like a whole bunch of energy and, you know, we're going to keep that in there because now you know a little more about him because you've seen other things in context. So now you know about him. It's like, hey, how good do I feel about what Ryan Barron is saying about Jason? Because, you know, you just... It is a process. I mean, I've had, you know, 5,000 pages of notes. You're not going to just throw it all into a book.
Sure.
You just, you just keep taking things away and you just try to make it as clear as you can. That's the whole fun of writing for me is construction and editing.
And how do you do that? Do you just sit at like a table with all these papers in front of you and like type or like,
help?
What is your setup?
Just get in the Cuisinart with all the papers and then just
good luck.
Grab what I can.
It took you like 7 years to write this book.
Well, so I worked about a year and a half, 2 years on it really steadily until, so I would say end of 2011. Then I was putting out some other books. I abandoned it. It was just too hard. I had a filing cabinet full of stuff. I was like, oh, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. And then I went, literally opened the filing cabinet, and it was almost as though people were jumping out at me no, listen, you have to go. And I was like, okay. So I went back to it, and I abandoned it again. And then in 2014, I just committed. I said, I'm doing it. And then did really just work steadily for 2 years, and then sold it and came out July 1st.
Here it is.
Yep.
And I have it here. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my last question about the book.
Yeah.
What are you most proud of with this book?
I I always find pride a funny word. I'm always proud of other people, but I don't know if I would say proud. I will say I wrote the book I wanted to write. I would not change one word. And we were talking earlier. They say, write the book you want to read. This is a book I would want to read. And I wouldn't change a word. So I mean, that's all
that means you're proud of the whole thing.
Okay.
It's not you saying pride, but it's me saying it for you.
Oh, okay.
Putting words in your mouth. Last little thing. You write about heavy stuff.
And it's a funny thing because you're not the first person to note that. And I'm like, as a personality, I am not heavy at all. I'm like really joyous. I like having people over and cook and drink wine. Let's go out. Let's dance. Let's do fun things. But I seem to be curious about things that are sort of heavy. To use a catch-all term, and I don't see them really being explored or unpacked in a way that makes sense to me. The answers are too pad or they're too, I don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm able to do that because I am, buoyant for the most part.
Well, what do you, is there anything that you consciously do for self-care when you're in this kind of work?
Wine? No, I don't know. I exercise a lot, but I just do that anyway and read just normal stuff.
Nothing special.
I'm like, I don't meditate or do any kind of antidepressants or anything.
Well, I like to read really heavy stuff. Like my favorite books are always like the ones where people ask me, you read a whole 600 page book on Attica prison uprising? And I'm like, yeah, and it's an amazing book. But I also have a pretty buoyant personality in general. But and I like the heavy stuff. Like,
and you exercise a lot too.
Exercise a lot for my job. And I also eat French fries. But I don't do anything else. I mean, reading these stories for me is self-care. Like I feel like when I can cozy up with like a really, something that is other people are like, how could you ever? I mean, I read your book in like a day and a half. I couldn't put it down. It exactly the perfect mix of the darkness and the understanding, the compassion. Like there's a lot of empathy for all the people in this book. And to me, when a book works that way, when it's working on finding out answers of something that seems unimaginable, but also is like compassionate and understanding, and also doesn't tell the reader what to think.
No, that's sweet. So first you made me think of something. Maybe it's the case. You and I both like to read these books that, air quotes heavy.
Yeah.
Because if the writer has done his or her job right, they're humanizing people that are usually demonized or are usually made two-dimensional. And so actually we're kind of bringing optimism to these stories because we're understanding more about human beings. And yes, not telling people what to think. That is my favorite way to write. Someone said like, how do you avoid, wanting to kind of give it like a nice redemptive ending? I'm like, I've never been interesting to me.
Right. Who cares?
Who cares? So,
I love that.
Let the reader decide.
Let the reader decide. Yeah. Totally. I mean, you have to assume your reader is like semi-intelligent.
Or smarter than me. I'm hoping they're smarter
than
me.
Worst case scenario, they're semi-intelligent. Yeah. Best case scenario, they're a Mensa. Who knows? But like
Mensa.
But yeah, I mean, I always appreciate when I read a book and I'm like, oh, I understand this thing that they didn't tell me to understand. I'm like, I'm such a genius. I did it. Amazing. Well, I'm going to move on to the book portion of this podcast, even though this has all been books anyways. So tell me two books you love and a book that you hate or dislike. I know authors don't like to say they hate books.
Well,
I'm
not going to have a trouble
books.
With
okay,
that
great,
hate.
Great, great.
Okay, the two books I love one is Wanderer by Sterling Hayden, who's the actor. He was really more famous in like the 60s. People, if you've seen The Godfather, you will remember him as like the police chief that's shot in the throat in that restaurant by Al Pacino. Anyway, it's a memoir of him and like escaping from Hollywood and taking his kids out on the ocean. It's a brilliant book. I love this book. And Shot in the Heart by Michael Gilmore
about
his brother Gary Gilmore, who was also committed murder in Oregon. There's a lot of overlaps with his story and not Amanda so much, but another murderer in the book that you read about, the guy that in my book about the triple, the guy, the meth killer, the meth addict.
Yes.
Anyway, a book I hate is The Confederacy of Dunces.
Me too. That's my brother's favorite book. And I put it down.
Okay. So this came out, I don't know, I was in college or something and everybody was reading it. You know, it was like, oh, and of course it was a sad story. He had committed suicide. His mother got it published. I tried to read this book 4 or 5 times and I would get to page like whatever 53. I'm like, I am so done.
So done.
So no.
Oh my God. I'm so happy you said that. It's my brother. Like, you have to read this book. And I got it. And I was like, this is not good for me. Okay. What's the last great book you read?
The last great, and I really agonized over this because I read a lot of really good books. Mm-hmm. The last great book I read was Barbarian Days by William Finnegan.
I don't know that. Tell me.
He is a writer for The New Yorker. He writes from various war zones and pretty, really good long narrative features. But it's about his life as a surfer from the time he was a very young boy. It is a magnificent book. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to meet him last year, like shake his hand. I was like, had a schoolgirl crush. I was like, hi. Anyway, it's really good.
Do you like when people fan out over you as an author?
It hasn't happened that much. I'm
fanning out over.
I don't even know what to do. I just like want to smile and hug you and talk to you. Yeah. Like let's see. I don't know.
I was nervous before you got here. I was like, oh my God, Lord. I'm going to meet Nancy Rollman. No. And like, cause no. I loved your book so much. Well, I feel like when you write a good book, people like want, I like just want to like sit next to you and hold your hand and be like, can we be friends? Cause I'm into you.
Well, so this book, you know, is definitely the biggest, like I have like 4 other books on Amazon and mm-hmm. like they have a total of like 30 comments and maybe they've had 200 readers like combined.
Right.
So this is obviously the first time that things are kind of fulminating. And so I hope to meet more people. It's been amazing so far, the people I've gotten to meet because of this book. It's just a beautiful thing. And
So if you read the book and you meet Nancy, fan out over her so she can tell you if she likes it or not.
Yeah. So then I'll know.
I'm a big fan of telling people when you like something that they've created ever since I started making this podcast.
Oh, I am too.
Because I'm like I went to a restaurant the other night and I was like, the pastry chef brought us our entree, or no, the chef brought us our pastry. And I was like, this is the greatest restaurant. Like, it's so good. I was like almost crying. And I was like, why am I so weird now?
I don't really know that I do this deliberately, but apparently every time I see or meet someone, I'm like, oh my God, I love your hair. Or look at your blouse or look at the pastry. And someone said to me, oh, you do that to, I don't know, to open the door. So I was like, no, I do it because I think it.
I like,
you know,
the shirt.
I see every, I just like, just see it. You just want to be around it.
Totally. So I'm into it.
Yeah.
What are you reading right now?
I am reading a book. I mentioned my friend Nick Gillespie the other day. He's with Reason.com and Reason Magazine. And he was comparing my book to a book of Errol Morris's called A Wilderness of Errors, where he's looking at the Jeffrey McDonald murder case, which took place pretty famous in Fayetteville in 1970. His wife and 2 young daughters were found murdered, and he was accused of it. So a lot of books came out about this book.
Okay.
So I'm reading that now to try and figure out. I'm liking it, and I'm also internally arguing with him in my head.
Is this the book that inspired the Janet Malcolm?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. And it was so she wrote The Journalist and the Murderer, which was about the Joe McGinnis book about the murder. Anyway,
Layers on
layers. See how this stuff happens. Yeah. So I'm reading that now.
Do you read more than one book at a time or just one?
You know, it's been a little weird with my book being released. I've had sort of a short attention span, mm-hmm. but usually I am reading more than one book at a time. Like I have a book I read in the mornings when it's super quiet and mm-hmm. I'm by myself. And then I'll have something else by the bed and then I'm listening to something in the car. But I kind of would like to read one book. And then I'm also reviewing books. So
sure.
I kind of would like to read one book at a time. I think I'd get more done.
Yeah. I'm a one book. I call it a one book pony.
I'm going to try.
Okay. Good. Let me know how it goes.
Okay.
What are some books that you're looking forward to reading?
Whatever Catherine Boo writes next.
I've heard you talk about her before.
So she is the author of Behind the Beautiful Forevers, which I was asked to review, and then I was asked to interview her, and you asked if I'm ever surprised, or like fan or whatever. I'm always surprised when big authors I meet already know my work. Yes. And like, how? But she did. And we became friends. And she was super great while I was writing this. I mean, I barely see her. She lives across the country, but she was super encouraging. And she gets a nice thank you in the book. So I want to see whatever she writes next.
That's awesome. How do you pick what book you're going to read?
I think it's mostly from just reading about books, whether I'm reading a book review section or I hear something. Sometimes sitting with journalists, we're like, you know, bandying about. I don't read a ton of contemporary fiction, but a little bit.
I don't read a ton of contemporary fiction either.
Yeah. Yeah.
What book reviews do you like? Like, which ones do you go to when you're looking for your book?
Well, I've been reviewing for the Wall Street Journal for about 6 years.
Okay.
They have a fantastic review section on Saturdays. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
New York Times. I don't know, everywhere. Like, you could even be looking through People magazine at the dentist's office, and they've got this little encapsulation.
Books.
Like,
I know.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mostly reading about books.
Mostly reading about them.
Yep.
What's on your nightstand right now?
So after I pulled off all the old copies of The New Yorker,
you and my husband both.
I mean, it's like, I love it, but it's like, it's here again.
I know. It's like, how will I get through it?
The last seven issues.
His parents' house is just full of New Yorkers, like everywhere. I'm like, this is from like 6 months ago.
I know. I have a book called The Reckonings by Lacey Johnson. It's a book of essays. I had reviewed her truly harrowing previous book, The Other Side, for The Wall Street Journal. And got an advanced copy of this. And so far, it's terrific. I have something called The Landmark Julius Caesar, which I have yet to crack open. And I really don't have any idea how it wound up on my nightstand. I have Robert Moses's The Power Broker, which is, you know, it's a doorstopper. And but it's really good. And I'm from New York City, so that's interesting. I have a French easy reader, Histoire à lire le soir, which I said I'd read so I would learn French. And of course, you know how that's going.
Yeah.
It's not.
Sounded good.
Yeah. And then I've got this book. I don't ever really read like the, what do they call them? Trade paperbacks, like the kind you see at the airport and stuff.
Yeah.
But someone wrote about this book, a friend of mine, called The Passage by Justin Cronin. And like the next in the series had come out and he's like, it's just incredible. So I picked up The Passage and it was really good. And so I bought the next one and it's called The 12. And I keep forgetting about it. Mm-hmm. But every time I pick it up and read like 20 pages, I'm like, man, this has got some velocity and it's scary and it's kind of like Stephen King like and apocalyptic and it's fun.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
I love a book, fiction, a book called In the Valley of the Kings by Terrence Holt, which has been way, way underread. Like, it's got like 7 comments on Amazon and I'm one of them. It's one of the best. It's the kind of fiction I like, which is kind of spooky.
Okay.
I don't mean spooky like Stephen King spooky. I mean like, okay, I put out a book of short stories and there's a little similarity, I think, between that. And then nonfiction, earlier this year, I read Being Mortal by Atul Gawande and I was blown away. And I think everybody should read it because... Yeah. Guess what? Everyone's going to die.
Sure. Are.
And it's just really useful information and really well done.
I love him.
Yeah.
Like, he's really great. You know, so Amazon and like some other big companies are starting a medical something and he's like in charge of it. My husband is a doctor and he works at Kaiser and he's like, I think I'm going to lose my job soon. I think we're all going to be out of business, whatever Amazon and Atul Gawande are working on.
He can go where, it's Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
Maybe Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, and they brought in Atul Gawande to head this up. Hey, man, I'll do it.
Yeah.
A better way to have healthcare?
Sure, certainly.
Hello.
He has that book, Checklist Manifesto, and it's all about like the power of checklists, specifically in medicine, but also like pilots use them and this and that. And I read that. It's the first book I read of his, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm obsessed with checklists. I was already, but like if you can make a checklist an interesting book, I'm obsessed with you. I'm obsessed with, I think you're perfect. What's a good book that someone recommended to you?
So my best girlfriend is Deborah Reed. She's a novelist. She's got about 7 books out and she has recommended 2 books to me, both of which I loved.
Okay.
One was Life After Life by Kate Atkinson.
Okay.
That's a novel. I loved it. And then a book called City of Thieves. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. My David Benioff.
Oh, my God. Yes. Okay, let's all bow down to this book,
so
man.
Good. And you know he is Game of Thrones.
I know.
And he's married to Amanda Peet.
Hello.
Like, what?
Okay, like, hello, you perfect human. I'm sorry. I was like, I love this book. so much. And for your readers, it is like nothing I've ever read. But if there are books like this, could you please let me know?
Send us all the books
please
that are like this.
Let me know about the books that are like City of Thieves.
Oh my God, so good. I don't like fiction, like basically as a rule. Like maybe I can find fiction that I enjoy, but yes. Like I'm never going to pick up a piece of fiction. And my brother, who sometimes hits and sometimes misses with his recommendations, and he's like my best friend, he was like, read this book. I was like, I don't know, Brady. And I...
Oh, man. Oh. Really, it's guys, read City of Thieves.
So good. Yeah. So yeah. good. Oh, yeah. my God. Yeah. Yeah. what's the best book you've received as a gift?
So my daughter's boyfriend, he reads a lot of graphic novels. Okay. And he recently gave me, it's called Alias Omnibus, and it's a giant, gorgeous illustrated book about the Marvel hero Jessica Jones. Mm. And it's just, it's so beautiful, first mm-hmm. of all. It's right on the coffee table. And it's so good. It's so smart. Oh, so I love it. Thanks, that's Nick.
Shout out to Nick. Do you set reading goals for yourself?
I don't have any right now. Sometimes I do. Usually I don't. I fail. Like mm-hmm. I'm going to read, you know, all of Aristotle and right. I get like, you know, 17 pages and I'm like, okay, I'm done with that. Yeah.
You can, but no, you don't.
Yeah,
usually.
I can, but I don't. Yeah.
Are there things that you wish were different about the way that you read? Or your reading lifestyle?
I probably am reading or listening to a podcast or an audiobook about 4 or 5 hours a day, and I'd like that to be more. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a lot of hours.
I know, but yay.
I guess listening cuts down on what it feels like.
Oh, for sure. I go out walking for 2 hours and yeah. just listen to my podcasts yeah. or... Yeah.
There's you're familiar with Bookstagram, I know.
Like Bookstagram?
Like the book corner of Instagram, like all the people who post and review books. Oh my God, Nancy, we got to get you in on Bookstagram.
I'm so
That's where you can find our yeah. Instagram. But yeah. there's like this whole world of people who are readers, like, you know, people who read 150 books a year just yep. like for pleasure. And one of these accounts is called 25 and 5. And it's basically a read-a-thon, like a challenge. And you read for 25 hours in 5 days. So it breaks down 5 hours yeah, yep. a day. And I tried to do it for the first time a few weeks ago and I got 21 hours, which felt like a win for me, but I didn't allow myself to do audiobooks because I okay. felt like that yeah. was kind of cheating for the readathon.
It is. Yeah.
It was hard. 5 hours of actually sitting down to read well, is hard on your eyes.
It's our devices at this point. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, but maybe I should check my email again. And who liked my Instagram post? Yeah. It's like that's – so if you can get – like in the mornings –
I go airplane mode.
I have everything off and I just sit and, yeah, and
it's true. Because once you sit down world. And you're into it, you're yeah. like, ugh. That's yeah. – well, I read your book during that. That was the first book I read. I read it in like a day and a half. Yay. And I was like, this is so great. Any genres – that you just love or just are not into?
My favorite genre is what I hope I can write well, which is narrative nonfiction by reporters.
Okay.
So there's Didion, of course. But I actually love her fiction maybe even more than her nonfiction.
I like play it as
yeah, Play It As It Is.
I like that. But I love Year of Magical Thinking.
I like that. I didn't love it, but yeah. I liked it. She's got a book of sort of a compilation of essays called After Henry, mm-hmm. which is really good, and mm-hmm. I highly recommend. I've read that like 3 times. Robert Kolker's Lost Girls is one of my favorite.
I have that. Is that about the Long Island?
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually, Bob was super helpful in me getting my book published, so shout out to Bob.
Shout out, Bob.
Catherine Boo's Behind the Beautiful Forevers, mm-hmm. which you talked about, and I'm a big fan of William Langevin's. He's now the international correspondent for Vanity Fair, but he mm-hmm. used to be at The Atlantic. And one of my favorite books that I've read many times of his is called Sahara Unveiled. And okay. it's just absolutely beautiful.
Love that.
Yeah.
What about genres that you don't particularly care for?
I don't know if I've ever read a romance novel.
Okay.
Unless, like, I think I read The Thorn Birds in high school, maybe. I don't know if that's a romance novel.
Okay.
I am very impatient with fussy or overworked writing, you know, mm-hmm. lots of adverbs. And mm-hmm. I was sent an advanced copy of a novel recently for possible review. Mm-hmm. And in the first paragraph, there was something about the buttery light latticing up the wall. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't care about your pretty words.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Tell me a story.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Actually, I meant to ask you this about your book. So there's a moment in your book where you're talking about fireworks.
Yes.
And there's another moment where it's rainy and it's like a rainy day and you're kind of describing like the temperature and whatever. And I wanted to know, do you write down like the day that I met with the lawyer, it was rainy and yes. it felt like this. You do.
Yes.
Okay.
And I had to, for instance, I wanted to know the water temperature of
right.
the river when the children, so you can actually find that stuff out.
Right.
Like
sure.
there's a, you know, Willamette River metric guide, blah, blah, blah. So yes, you, and I do write it down. You know, something journalists, you learn to do as a journalist is like, you're recording maybe, but you're also writing like, yeah, he smells like French fries. Or,
got
you
it.
Know, there was this woman with purple hair, because you don't know if you're going to need it.
Yeah.
And most of the time you don't, but you might.
You might.
So don't lose it.
Okay. Yeah. I was very curious yeah. about that because it was like yeah. so specific. And I was like, does she just remember this day?
Oh, I just make it all up. It's all, you know, we just
did
make
you. I
up.
Was wondering yeah. if you maybe went back and like checked the weather report and then kind of like embellished or like, you
no,
know.
No, no embellishing. You just check and you don't, you know, the funny thing is that sometimes you're like, oh man, I wish I knew the wind speed, but I can't find
right.
that out. And then you're like, wait, I can just say it this way. You
right.
You'll never not have what you need.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of a tangent, but it was a question that I meant to ask you earlier because when I was reading the book, I was like, does she remember this windy day or like rainy day? Okay. Back to your questions. Oh, true crime.
Yeah.
You write it, you
yep.
read it. What's yep. your fave? I'm basically asking you for recommendations.
This was almost that is so hard, but I think I'm going to say a book called The Adversary mm-hmm. by Emmanuel Carrère, which I've now read, I think, 3 times.
So you do reread. You're a rereader.
I guess I am, but I not a lot. I mean,
it has to be really good.
Yeah, like I reread the Carrère. I read it twice just for pleasure over mm-hmm. my lifetime, and then my editor and I were talking about him, that we both loved this book, and I thought, let me reread it now while I'm writing mine.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a lot of overlaps with the main character in that book and one of the characters who I shall not name in my book.
Oh.
So okay. just in terms of the personality ticks,
got
shall
it.
We say.
Got it.
Yeah.
What about your favorite book of investigative journalism?
Hands down, baby, Columbine.
Oh, so
it's
good.
It changed my world. It changed
mine
my
too.
World.
I love that yeah. book so much. And he has his new book, Parklands, coming out February 12th. And I cannot wait. Dave Cullen. Ugh.
With
amazing.
That cover.
The cover.
The new cover.
I mean,
incredible.
I have chills.
Yeah.
How do you read? Ebook, hard copy, audio?
So
a little audio, we know.
Yeah, little audio. I do like listening to mostly podcasts, but mm-hmm. I do listen to some audiobooks, mm-hmm. always nonfiction. Mostly hard copy. A lot of times because I also review books mm-hmm. and I've got to like make notes on it and
got
just
it.
Be able to touch it and get where I need to go. I have a Kindle. But I always forget to charge it. But I have read it. I've read on my phone. I've read okay. books on my phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, and weirdly for me, the Kindle and the phone are the ways to get through like the doorstoppers, like uh-huh. the Goldfinch.
Sure.
I read half on my phone. Like it's a 900-page book, but
yeah.
I don't know. It worked. I do listen to audiobooks. Not, like I said, nonfiction only. Currently, I'm listening to I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is really, really,
I have it.
Really good on audio.
I think I'm going to save it for October so I can
okay.
spook myself.
Really? Yeah. Really, it's really well done.
That's a good segue for our sponsor, Audible.
Yay.
Audible online database for audiobooks. Your book is on Audible.
Yes.
You read it.
I did.
So our listeners, just so you know, guys, if you go to audibletrial.com/thestacks, you get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So I've already told you we're going to be covering To the Bridge in November, so you might consider getting it on Audible, listening to Nancy read you this book, because she is also a character in this book. So you can, I mean, she's a presence in the book. You're a character in the book. So you can hear her kind of take you through this story, or you could get I'll Be Gone in the Dark or whatever else you want, but it's free. So free 30 days, free audiobook download, audibletrial.com/thestacks. Boom.
I love Audible. I
do
love
you?
It.
You
yeah,
just,
I do.
I like to listen to books by celebrities about their lives mostly, because I just think they do a really good job.
I have one. I mean, he is a celebrity, but he's a writer. So if one I highly recommend is Gore Vidal reading his memoir called Point to Point Navigation, and he's reading it in his voice.
Oh my God,
and it
wait.
Is so delicious.
Okay.
Highly recommend.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Where do you read, or like what's your ideal kind of reading setup?
So funny. I'm staying at a friend of mine's house in the Hollywood Hills. He's mm-hmm. got a beautiful home. And every time I walk past this one couch under this window, I'm like, that's my reading spot right there. My favorite part of the day, I get up. No one else is up in the house. I sit on the couch and I just read for an hour. I read in bed. I read at my desk.
Anywhere.
I go to a park and I read.
Sure.
But my favorite is just sitting on the couch and reading.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Where do you write?
Well, so I have a really nice office at home, and I do the bulk of my writing there. But when I need to go and really just get out of my life to get solid work done, I will go. I go to my friend's house in Manzanita. She'll be gone someplace, and I'll spend 2 weeks there. And I set up this sort of like monastic existence. So any place I can set up a desk and just sort of sit there and write.
That's beautiful.
Yep.
What's the last book that made you laugh?
Well, I hate to say I didn't get through it, but Tina Brown had some pretty good lines in the Vanity Fair Chronicles. Okay. I got to say, she was a sharp writer. I didn't finish it because whatever, but it was pretty good.
What about a book that made you cry?
So I recently reread one of my favorite novels, which is Joseph O'Neill's Netherland. And I wonder when I get to the last page if I'm going to cry again like I did the first time. And
you did.
I cried again.
It still works. What about a book that made you angry?
Oh, so I recently reviewed The Cadaver King and The Country Dentist by Radley Balco and Tucker Carrington. And I know Radley as a colleague that we've never met. And if you want to become completely enraged at how the criminal justice system in this country, you know, through cowardice and prejudice and greed and laziness and idiocy, destroys people's lives, the lives of innocent people, then read this book.
What's it called again?
It's called The Cadaver King and the Country Dentist.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I will read that. What about a book where you feel like you learned a lot?
This is also a book I recommend a lot, which is The Sociopath Next Door by Dr. Martha Stout. It was the first time, I read it quite a while ago, way before I was working on this book. And it really, in layman's terms, lays out sociopathy, which is something the wilderness of errors, which I'm reading right now. He completely discounts the theory, but I'm going to disagree with him. I also tend to like books that are explain to us really practical things. And one I really liked was Deep Survival. Okay. Who lives, who dies, and why?
Whoa.
Yeah. And talking about how people make really stupid physical mistakes. They become overconfident. I'll give you a quick story. Like the Navy SEAL who was with his friends and they were kayaking, and his friends are like, okay, dude, don't go over here because there's this like double hydraulic. And if you flip, you're not going to be able to get out. And the guy's like, yeah, hello, I'm a Navy SEAL.
Right.
He drowned because his experience told him he knew, but he didn't know.
Right.
So it's a lot about those things. So it's kind of practical advice.
I love that. Yeah. That sounds super interesting.
It's fun.
What's a book that you're embarrassed about having read?
I don't think I have any.
No?
Okay. No.
That's okay.
Yeah.
What about a book you're embarrassed that you've never read?
Oh, well, it's not that I've never read Shakespeare. I have read Shakespeare. I've probably read, I don't know, 6 or 8 plays. I love seeing Shakespeare performed, but that awe and veneration that I know people get from Shakespeare.
Yeah.
I have yet to experience it.
I'm one of those people.
So I'm sort of embarrassed.
Have you read Othello?
Probably years and
years
ago.
That's one of the ones that I reread it recently. Okay. I'm actually in the middle of I'm doing all 37 plays, one a month for the next 3 years. I'm on month 3.
Okay.
So I'm on Henry.
Let's talk next month.
Yeah, I'm on Henry 6, part 2. I just finished it. The Henrys are boring. But I reread Othello.
Okay.
And I was like,
okay.
Like but I like to see them. I was an actor. I love seeing them. I love them. I studied classical theater. So for me, it's like exciting and I can read them and imagine the thing. And I think a lot of times if they're meant to be said out loud, so I'll even read them out loud to myself and like act.
Oh, well, I think that's right. I mean, I read The Odyssey and I was rereading it last summer and I was saying a lot of it out loud because it works. But see, okay, so The Odyssey, whatever rhythm it's called something. I don't remember what it's called. It completely works for me. And I just go like, shoo, 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 shoo.
Pentameter.
I don't know. I'm like, I start to get really sleepy or I'm like, I'm not getting on the train.
Huh.
So maybe I should take your challenge and see if I can get there.
So. Yeah. Grab one that you think might be like Measure for Measure is so good.
Okay.
There's some that are like weird good. We can talk more about this. I love Shakespeare.
Okay.
What about, did I ask you a book that you're proud about having read? I think I skipped that, but I love that one.
Okay. So I don't know if proud is the right word, but I can't say I'm unimpressed with having gotten through His Battle with Truth by Gita Sereny, which is a an 800-page study of Albert Speer. Whoa. And it was on the bedside for so long. My husband's like, "You still reading that, babe?"
And you finished it and you were I did it.
No, well, I really enjoyed it, but it was a doorstopper. Yeah. 800 pages of tiny type with lots of footnotes, and you know, you got to understand the historical context of Speer. Right. So yeah, but that I really liked it. Yeah. So.
That's awesome. What's a favorite book from your childhood?
You know, this is something, I have a daughter and I can't believe I didn't read these to her when she was little. There's a series of books called All of a Kind Family, and it's about these five little sisters living in the Lower East Side, like at the turn of the last century. They're Jewish and the holidays, and they're just their family and what happens in the neighborhood. And I just love them. I read them and read them. I never hear anything about them.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. What about a favorite book assigned in school?
Edie by Jean Stein, about Edie Sedgwick.
Oh.
And I read it, and it was sort of a weird confluence of, Edie was like part of Warhol's factory. And so it was a weird confluence of me like having some sort of longing to be this sort of tragic downtown New York girl and being the person that writes about this tragic downtown. Right? But when I read that, I think at that point, even though I was still destined to be a movie star at that point, I think something clicked in my head about writing.
Sure.
So yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
What would be a book that you would assign to high school students?
So when my daughter and her friends, girlfriends, were 16, I gave them two books.
Okay.
One was Mary Gaitskill's Bad Behavior, which is maybe my favorite book of short stories.
Okay.
And Gavin De Becker's The Gift of Fear, which is basically about how to protect yourself.
Interesting.
And I think, you know, Mary Gaitskill, The Behavior, is definitely, you know, hypersexual and depressive and odd.
Depends on the school.
And, yeah. And then The Gift of Fear. But I think the two of those together is pretty well-rounded education. So
you're set. Who would you want to write the book of your life?
You know, I don't actively want anybody to do that.
Would you write it?
I've written things. I mean, you can go, again, you can go to Amazon and you can get a little 20-page memoir I wrote called The Queens of Montague Street, which is about me being a very bad teenager. No, I don't really have an interest in writing my life, and I don't have an active interest in anyone else doing it. However, if somebody wanted to, go for it.
Challenge is out there.
Yeah.
Were there any books that influenced your professional career?
Yes.
Or that inspired you? Or?
Yes. So I was reading Michael Gilmore's Shot in the Heart right at the beginning of my career when I was writing my first big feature about John Wayne Gacy. And I did not really know how to do this at all. And I was actually away with my mother and my daughter. My daughter was 4 at the time. And they went off to the beach every day. It was summertime. And I locked myself in my bedroom and I read this book. Mm. And I read how he crafted story. And I taught myself how to write.
Wow.
And I taught myself how to write the feature. I think this sort of continues to happen. You read people that you just admire so much, and you're like, how can I take how they contoured their story and contour the way I'm going to tell my story? And then, interestingly, to bring it around full circle, Michael Gilmore and his wife are very big on Facebook, and he's written about his stage 4 HPV cancer in his neck. And they read my piece and got in touch with me to say how, and I just sent them a copy of the book. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Did you tell him?
Oh, we've communicated.
Oh, okay. And you told him that he helped you become a writer.
Did.
That's amazing. What's your favorite adaptation of a book or a film or a book to film or TV that maybe was better than the book or just a favorite?
Well, I really liked, the Patrick Melrose series, and they recently did a 5-part TV series with it starring Benedict Cumberbatch. Is that his name?
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
Really good. Really well done. Yeah.
I like that.
Yep.
This is my favorite question. I stole it from the New York Times. If you could require the president of the United States, the current one, to read one book, what would it be?
Well, I think you have to be curious about someone's experience to get anything from any book. And I don't think the president has yet to evince any curiosity about others at all, so far as I can see. So I think anything I offered him, could only, because of how he operates, be used either as a weapon mm. against other people or be used to shine his own star. However, if I get some pleasure, if I could lock him in a room and with something, I would give him all of James Baldwin's works
mm.
and have him read them all and then have them read them again.
That's good. Yeah. You're not the first person to suggest James Baldwin for him.
Really?
You're not the first
well,
person.
Well, he's maybe the smartest writer I've sure. ever read. And sure. and I don't say this really because of race issues, though of course that's there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just that he's so unbelievably smart mm-hmm. and his writing is just, I mean, can we name no. a better writer?
I'm reading If Beale Street Could Talk right now. And I'm 30 pages in and I'm like deep breaths.
Yeah.
He's great. Okay. Anything else you want to add or say or anything?
My favorite writers?
Oh yeah, sure.
Super quick. Let's see. J.M. Coetzee.
Okay.
Love his novels. Didion. Mm. Catherine Boo, Dave Cullen, Mary Gateskill. I guess we already talked about them. And I'm going to add James Baldwin and Raymond Chandler.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, so Nancy will be back next week. We're going to discuss a book that we both really like, which is Bad Blood by John Carreyrou.
Carreyrou.
It's about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. And get ready, y'all. It's going to be really, it's a really, really good book. And it's true crime meets business crime meets like just female antihero. It's juicy. So make sure you read it. It's a quick read. I dare you to take longer than a week. It's almost impossible. It's so good.
Two sittings.
Yeah. I think mine was three. I'm just obsessed. I've forced it on everyone in my family. It's no big deal. So Bad Blood next week. Nancy will be back. Thank you for being here today.
Tracy, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And we will see you all in the stacks. That's all for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you to our guest, Nancy Rommelman. I'd also like to thank Little A for providing a free copy of Nancy's book, To the Bridge. Nancy will be back next week for the Stacks Book Club to discuss Bad Blood by John Carreyrou. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. Go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks for 50% off your first subscription box. Thank you also to Audible. Get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thestacks. Remember, you can join the Stacks Pack and be a part of creating this podcast and earn awesome perks by going to patreon.com/thestacks and contributing as little as $1 a month. Make sure you're subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite. Our theme music is from Tagirigis. And this show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.